and the door swung inward. The thin squeal of the leather hinges made him shiver in spite of himself. He stepped into the room. It was windowless, like all Egyptian dwellings, but just over the level of Ranefer's head, the walls ended, and widely spaced wooden posts rose from them to support the ceiling several feet above. Through the space thus opened to the fresh air of evening, moonlight poured in, dimly lighting Gebu's frayed sleeping mat and baked clay headrest, a stool or two, a box in one corner, and a battered wooden chest in another. He found nothing there but a coal pot half through of the black eye paint, a copper mirror, a razor, and a little jar of the ointment Gebu had been perfuming himself with lately. The chest looked no more promising. He fumbled hastily among sandals, headcloths, a couple of coarse white linen shenties 4 sizes larger than the one wrapped around his own narrow hips, and several of the new fine-woven ones. There was something hard and curving in a corner, wrapped in a scrap of cotton rag. It might be a jug of honey. He tugged it out, jerked the cloth away impatiently, and went numb all over with the shock of what he saw. There in his hand lay a gold goblet more beautiful than the sun. For a moment he stood perfectly still. Then he sank to his knees, for his legs had suddenly become too weak to support him. In a shaft of moonlight, he examined his find more closely. It was pure gold, exquisitely fashioned in the shape of a lotus blossom. An inlaid band around its rim was of priceless silver, and so was its delicate stem. It was the work of some master who was Zau's equal or superior, and worth a prince's ransom. Gebu had stolen it, that was certain. But where? From whom? There was not a gold house in the city of the dead that produced such work as this. Only Zau could have made it, and Ranefer was growing more and more uncertain whether even Zau could have, or would have. There was something about it that was different from the work one saw nowadays, the manner of finishing the inside of the base, for instance. Perhaps it had been made long ago, handed down to some rich noble from his father. Ranefer bent closer. Was that a bit of picture writing, etched into the golden curve of a petal? He twisted it to catch the light and saw a group of hieroglyphics enclosed in an oval line. The sign of royalty. Just so were the names of kings always written, with an oval line about them. Had that accursed one stolen this from the palace itself? But how under heaven could anyone have done that? Perhaps he could read the name, if the light was sufficient, and if he had not forgotten too many of the little pictures he had learned at the scribe school. Slowly, one by one, he spelled out the hieroglyphics. Thutmose Neferkeperu. Ranefer's hand grew slowly icy while he knelt staring at the goblet as if it had turned to an adder in his grasp. He read the inscription again and still again, but there was no mistake. This treasure bore the name of Thutmose the Conqueror, Pharaoh of Egypt over 100 years ago. Gebu had robbed a tomb. There was no other explanation. Suddenly, all Ranefer wanted to get was the goblet back into the chest and himself out of this evil room. Clumsy with fright and haste, he dropped the cotton rag 3 times before he was able to wrap it about the goblet as it had been before. He knew very well his life would not be worth a copper if Gebu came home at this moment. He thrust the bundle deep into the chest and with shaking hands scattered the shenties and headcloths over it, shut the battered lid, and sprang for the stairs. As he did so, his bare feet grated on some gritty substance in the doorway. He stopped, peering down at scattered particles of dried clay on the moonlit floor. What was this? Some trap. He whirled to examine the bolt. Only then did he see that it had been sealed with a lump of clay and marked with a clear imprint of Gebu's scarab ring. An imprint which was now half broken away by the doors having been opened. One glance, and Gebu would know he had been in this room. Chapter 11. It was a sound on the street outside that finally roused Ronifer. He sprang into the dark passageway and flattened himself against the wall, listening to footsteps draw nearer, nearer, then pass and begin to recede down the street. Letting out his breath with a rush, he stumbled back to the door. Somehow he must mend that seal. He knelt to examine it. It had broken in the middle when he forced open the bolt. A lump still clung to the bolt itself, and a smaller one to the socket on the door frame. When the door was closed, a jagged crack would show plainly between the two lumps. The clay that had filled it was now scattered in dry crumbs on the floor. Standing in the passage, he closed the door gently, and in the process shut off every glimmer of the moonlight, which was all coming from Gebu's room. He could feel the crack, but he could no more see it than he could see through the wall at his side. There was no help for it. He must have a light. He had no idea where Gebu kept his fire drill and tinder. They had not turned up in any box or chest in his room. It would take time to search for them, more time to kindle a torch, and time was what Ronefer did not have. He must fetch a light. That meant venturing outside into the street and the Keft-haunted night. This time there is a moon, at least, he thought, and it is not really so late or dark or silent as that other night. This time I shall be braver. I have to be, and there has to be a torch burning somewhere. Quickly he opened the door again, gathering the scattered crumbs into a little pile with the aid of the moonlight. It was dim enough at best, and he had to feel anxiously into the shadows to be sure he had not missed some morsel of clay. Then he flew down the stairs and into the nearest of the storerooms. Again by torch, he located the oil pot, in which several torches soaked, head down. He snatched one and, shivering with dread, forced his reluctant feet across the courtyard and out the gate. A glance showed one torch burning in a wall bracket by a doorway far down the canyon-like street. He ran silently toward it, expecting each moment to hear the eerie flutter of a Keft's invisible wings, or feel its fleshless fingers on his throat. Once he glimpsed a moving shadow near an alleyway and sped faster, telling himself forcefully that it was a cat. Cat or Keft? By the time he reached the distant doorway, he was weak with fright. But he thrust his torch into the flame, made himself wait while it caught well, and, whispering what he could remember of the incantation against evil spirits, stumbled back the way he had come. Safe once more inside the court, he leaned a moment, panting, against the wall. He had fetched the light. He had not been seen. The Kefts and cats had stayed away. Now if only Gebu did not come back and catch him at this. He hurried upstairs to the door and thrust the torch into the wall bracket beside it. Scooping the clay crumbs into his palm, he spat on them, softened and mixed them with a careful finger, then pressed them into the crack and smoothed the edges as well as he could. A sliver of palm fiber off the torch handle made a poor enough engraving tool, but it was all he had. With it, he scratched in the missing bits of the scarab mark. It was done, but his heart sank as he saw how crude the patching looked. It would never pass Gebu's inspection. I must run away, he thought. Gebu will kill me. I must go quickly. But where? He had no place to go, and the night was thick with dangers. Stumbling with fatigue and with the trembling weakness which follows fright, he went downstairs once more, extinguishing the torch and replacing it in the oil jar, then flung himself on the familiar roughness of his mat. He would rest here just a moment. Then, Kefts or no Kefts, he must slip away through the streets and perhaps steal on board a Nile boat bound for Menef or Abydos in the morning. Perhaps an hour later, a sound in the darkness brought him bolt upright. Had he slept? He must get out of here, now, at once. He sprang to his feet, then froze at the sound of a muffled crash upstairs, followed by a stream of oaths. Gebu was home. He had seen the seal. It was too late. He ran toward the gate, only to whirl and run back again as he heard the upstairs door crash back against the wall and Gebu's staggering footsteps sound in the passage. Gebu was very drunk. He stumbled and half fell down the stairs, cursing at the top of his voice. Ranefer shrank into the darkest corner of the courtyard, wishing he could disappear into the bricks of the wall. He heard an angry, sleepy voice from the next house. "Quiet, son of pig! Can't a decent man rest?" Gebu roared some blurred profanity in answer. Ranefer, pressing still closer to the wall, watched the gleam of moonlight on Gebu's shenty as he wavered across the courtyard and into the storeroom. There was the familiar sound of a mug clinking against the water jar, then a tinkling crash of broken pottery. Gebu emerged and stood a moment, swaying. Then, miracle of miracles, he staggered to the stairs and climbed unsteadily up them. A moment later, the door of the upper room banged shut. Stunned at first, Ranefer gradually realized that he was safe. Gebu had not even noticed the seal. He had been too drunk. The boy's breath escaped in a quivering sigh. He left his corner and went back gratefully to his mat, thanking all the gods of Egypt for the invention of barley beer. Weary, sore, and still supperless, he fell at once into exhausted sleep. He was roused at daybreak by the usual rude dig of Gebu's sandal in his ribs. "Up with you! Make haste to the shop! You can buy a loaf on the way." Gebu tossed a copper to the paving. Ranefer groped for it and, rubbing his eyes with his knuckles, stumbled across the courtyard still half asleep. The cold water on his face helped wake him, and a careless touch on his hurt lip jogged his memory. Something important had happened. Suddenly, he was wide awake, remembering everything: the seal, his fear, the golden goblet. Last night, he had been too concerned with immediate problems to think about the goblet. Now it filled his mind. He turned down the street of the Crooked Dog and into the dusty thoroughfare, which was stained pink with dawn and already dotted with the scurrying figures of men on their way to work. He knew he must eat. He was too foggy with hunger now to think what this discovery meant to him. Near the street of the sailmakers, he spied the baker's boy, Kai, emerging from his master's shop with a laden basket on his head. Kai turned at Ranefer's hail and lowered his basket. "Yesterday's baking," he remarked laconically. "No matter," Ranefer retorted. "I have yesterday's hunger." He snatched one of the flat, round loaves and bit ravenously through the glazed crust, handing Kai his copper. "You get two for a copper when they're yesterday's," Kai said. He handed over another loaf, starting to raise the basket to his head again, and hesitated. "Take three. Nobody need know of it. You had best put Nile water on that broken lip of yours." With a sympathetic glance, Kai hurried off. Ranefer tucked the third loaf into his sash for midday and went on, more slowly now, toward the shop, eating as he walked. "It is the most important thing that ever happened, finding that goblet," he was thinking. "I will be free now, and Gebu will hang head downward from the palace wall. It is right. It is just. He stole a treasure from the precious habitation of that great king. That is a terrible evil thing to do. I will tell someone right away. I, Ranefer, the son of Thutra, will make the crime known. And then the soldiers will come out of the palace and snatch Gebu. And he will be gone forever. He will never beat me anymore, and I will be free of him and free of the stone shop, and everything will be like a wonderful dream. All Egypt will thank me. Pharaoh himself will thank me. He will summon me to his courtyard for the shower of gold. He will hang golden collars around my neck and order flowers strewn in front of me and tell Zau he must take me as his pupil. I will be rich and happy and eat roast waterfowl every day. I have only to tell this thing." An old familiar question broke in on his daydreams. How was he to tell of it? Take the goblet from the chest and show it to a soldier? But he would be accused of stealing it himself. Go to some noble, then, or seek an audience with a priest of Amun? Impossible. An insignificant stonecutter's apprentice would get no farther than the first guard. Even if he managed to tell someone, there would be Gebu to deal with. Would anyone take an apprentice's word against his master's? No, it would be he, not Gebu, who would end up hanging from the palace wall. It was all the same as before, when he wanted to tell about the wineskins. The questions had no answers. The problem, no solution. Nevertheless, he worried it as a dog worries a bone while he doled out cutting sand for old Zahotep's drill. Suddenly, at mid-morning, the idea came like a flash of sunshine. Zau the goldsmith was known at the palace itself. The soldiers would trust his word. But would Zau trust Ranefer's word? Ranefer was not sure. Still, Zau might believe it if he held the goblet in his hand. Surely he would believe then. The first step was to steal the goblet out of the chest. "The sand, boy! The sand!" Zahotep's voice crackled with impatience. "Do you think this drill is made to toy with like a lotus flower? If Pais sees me idle here..." Ranefer hurried toward with the pinch of sand. Zahotep set the bit of the drill into the hole again, still grumbling. "If the master were here, I'll wager you'd need no reminding." And where was the master? Ranefer thought as he stepped back. Gebu had not appeared this morning, though it had been his custom lately to come early to the shop and stay most of the day. He might show up at midday, but if he did not, the noon hour would be a perfect chance to slip away home and take the goblet. Gebu did not show up at midday. After waiting a last nervous few minutes, Ranefer wandered casually from the shop and, once out of sight, ran like a hare. He shrank from the very thought of breaking another door seal and repeating the nerve-wracking process of mending it, but there was no other way. Breathless, he reached the courtyard gate and pressed his ear against it. All was still. Cautiously, he stepped inside, padded across the empty court, and listened again. Then he climbed the steps, silent as a wraith. Immediately he knew that Gebu was gone, for the door at the far end of the passage was bolted on the outside. But, wonder of wonders, it was not sealed. The gods were with him. An instant later he was inside the room and searching frantically through the wooden chest. The goblet was gone. Dazed by the collapse of all his hopes yet another time, Ranefer started back to the shop. So certain had he been of finding the goblet waiting for him that even now he could almost feel it in his hands. Where had it gone? Maybe into some melting crucible, though it made him sick all through to imagine it. Maybe into the bale of linen in the hold of some northbound Nile boat, probably Setmas, to be sold in some other city downriver, or even in Crete or Phoenicia or Mycenae. In any case, he would never see it again, and soon Gebu would be wearing a fine new armband and swaggering when he walked. From habit, Ranefer's feet took him along the thoroughfare, past the lane that led between the flower fields toward the river, but his mind was so full of the goblet and his despair that when the ancient suddenly appeared from the lane and hurried toward him, he had to stare a moment to realize who it was. Then he wanted only to escape. He could not tell anyone about the goblet, not yet, perhaps not ever. "Oh, I cannot come to the thicket today," he stammered. "It grows late. I must get back to the shop. Tell Hecate I will see him another time." He tried to edge around the ancient, but the old man caught his arm. "Hecate has come and gone, young one. I waited in hopes of a glimpse of you. I have something to report. Aye." The ancient chuckled as Ranefer's attention suddenly riveted on him. "I've been spying again, without really intending it, I confess, And this time I saw something. I did indeed.
You saw something?
Ranefer repeated.
The goblet? He thought.
Could he have seen the goblet? Could he know where it is?
I saw a quarrel, a bitter one.
Ranefer, who had opened his mouth to ask straight out about the goblet, closed it again abruptly. The ancient nodded in a conspiratorial manner, winked his one eye, and chuckled again as he led Ranefer into the lane where his donkey was snuffling morosely along the baked roadside ditch in search of a blade of something green.
Come, I must keep an eye on Lotus while I tell you. It was Setma and that Gebu of yours who were quarreling. Only an hour ago it was on the edge of the papyrus marsh close by the fish docks. I was there cutting my day's load, no more than 3 cubits away from them, though they could not see me for the reeds. Hi, but they were angry. They all but came to blows, and I wished they had. That would have been a fine treat now, wouldn't it, young one?
But what did they say, ancient? What was it they quarreled about?
Gold, my boy. What else? When two rogues like that fall out, you may be sure it is over the price of some skullduggery one is to do for the other. I think that young scamp Hecate is right. Setma has been taking whatever Gebu steals and selling it for him in another city. But it's finished now.
Finished? Ancient, what did you hear them say?
They whispered, young one. They hissed and spat and growled at each other, but all in whispers, angry as they were. I caught only a few words. One was never. That was your stonecutter. Another was dangerous or danger. It was Setma saying that. Then Gebu said, a third part, no more, no more. There was more hissing and snarling, and a few fine names they called each other, but I heard nothing more of interest until Gebu swung away and walked past the edge of the marsh so close to me I could have touched him. You're finished, he was saying. There are other captains on the river. I stood quiet as an image, and he went by me and away toward the docks. When I looked again, Setma was gone too, and good riddance to them both.
It seems quite clear what they were saying, Ranefer said finally.
Aye, they've parted, that is certain. No doubt Setma raised his price and Gebu would have none of it.
So what of the goblet? Ranefer was thinking. What will he do with it?
Did they have anything with them? He asked cautiously. Anything with them? Oh, gold, you mean. Nay, I think not, young one. I saw no pouch nor packet of any kind. Of course, the reeds were in my way. Gebu carried something under his arm, but it looked to be a bundle of old clothes, nothing more.
I see, Ranefer said, as well as he could for his heart jumping into his throat. A bundle of old clothes such as he had found in his chest last night. A bundle of old shenties with the golden goblet inside it. He left the ancient to his afternoon's reed-cutting and hurried back to the shop. Gebu was not there. He had not been there during the midday either, as Ranefer found out by casual questioning of Zahotep. He did not appear all day, though Ranefer watched for him constantly, his head buzzing with questions as he worked. At the day's end he hurried home, but Gebu was not there either. A glance up the stairway showed the door at the top still closed but unsealed, exactly as it had been at noon.
What if he is gone for good?
Ranefer thought as he walked slowly toward the storeroom.
Nay, he could not be.
He would not leave while he is growing rich, while there is so much stealing to be done. The whole valley of the tombs with all the treasure in them. He shivered and stepped into the storeroom. If only someone would catch Gebu. Suppose a soldier should see him sneaking into the valley, or coming out of it with stolen gold, or should catch him walking about the streets right now with that bundle under his arm. Suppose someone had caught him. It was not impossible, was it? It would explain his absence from the shop all day, his absence now. Suppose he was in Pharaoh's prison this minute, or being dragged before the judges. Or, Happy possibilities were still racing each other through Ranefer's mind when he heard the gate crash open and Gebu's heavy footsteps start across the courtyard. Slowly, Ranefer put down the water jug, feeling his whole spirit wilt and the old burdens settle down on him again. The footsteps had almost reached the stair when something occurred to him. Darting to the storeroom door, he peered out cautiously. Gebu was just turning to climb the stair, but in the instant before the angle of the stairway hid him, Ranefer glimpsed a bundle under his arm. So he had brought the goblet home again, because of the quarrel with Setma, no doubt. Because he had so far found no other rivermen who would smuggle his treasure out of Thebes. It might be days before he found another, it might be weeks, and meanwhile the goblet would have to stay in that room upstairs, hidden in the chest. "The gods have given me another chance," Ranefer thought joyously, "and this time I will not bungle things. I will not wait for any days to pass. I will take the goblet tonight, as soon as he goes out." Gebu came down the stairs again almost immediately, carrying a packet of bread loaves which he had evidently bought on his way home, for they smelled deliciously of new-baked crust. He paused when he saw Ranefer standing in the courtyard. "You're early home for a change," he growled. "I have only just come," Ranefer said, hoping the lie would be believed. He did not care to set Gebu's suspicious mind working on any unusual behavior of his. He must remember hereafter to come and go exactly as always, at the same hours, in the same way. Evidently, Gebu did believe, for he merely grunted and walked on to the storeroom, jerking his head for Ranefer to follow. There he untied his packet, and leaving the loaves scattered on the shelf, broke the seal on the barrel of dried fish, extracted two, and put them on an earthen plate. Ranefer, who had expected to be asked at once for his coppers, stood holding them in his hand and watching hungrily as Gebu resealed the barrel, put a couple of loaves on the plate, and, taking it with him, started out of the storeroom. "Don't you want my coppers?" Ranefer asked in surprise. Gebu halted, turned with an oddly abstracted air, and held out his hand for the coins. An instant later, he turned back again, gave Ranefer one of the fish, went on to the next storeroom, emerging an instant later with an oil-soaked torch. Without another glance at Ranefer, who was standing astounded with a whole dried fish in his possession and the knowledge of three bread loaves unguarded on the shelf, he climbed the stairs and banged the door of his room behind him. In a moment, Ranefer heard the whining scrape of his fire drill as he worked to kindle the torch. Obviously, Gebu had a great deal on his mind, or he would have never forgotten the coppers or those other loaves or permitted his gutter-waif half-brother to keep a whole fish for himself. Ranefer thought he could guess the causes of this strange preoccupation, and his guesses gave him considerable satisfaction. It could not be comfortable having a stolen treasure in one's possession and no way to get rid of it. It could not be pleasant, either, to realize one had made an enemy of a rogue like Setma, and to wonder how soon and in what way that rogue might inform against one. Ranefer thought about that a moment, hopefully, then decided he dared not count on Setma's malice to help his own cause. It might be a long time before Setma found a way to inform on Gebu without informing on himself as well, and during that time Gebu might have found another smuggler, and the goblet would be gone. "Nay, tonight is my chance," Ranefer told himself. "Let him seal the door or not. As soon as he leaves for the wine shop, I'll go up those stairs, then I'll take the goblet and run to Zau, even if it's midnight. I can wait." Meanwhile, he had a feast to eat and plenty to save for morning, and the enjoyable knowledge that Gebu had a few burdens of his own for once. Hours later, he finally accepted the dismaying certainty that Gebu had not the slightest intention of leaving his room at all that night. "Very well, then," he told himself uneasily. "I will come here tomorrow at midday.
The goblet will still be in his room tomorrow. It must be. Let him hide it ever so well. I will find it somehow. He woke the next morning just in time to see Gebu cross the courtyard and let himself out the gate, with the bundle of shenties under his arm. Ranefer was up in a moment and after him, pausing only long enough to assure himself of a safe margin of distance between them. Gebu walked down the street of the Crooked Dog toward the river, turned on a broad street leading southward, past the fish docks and ferry landing, with Ranefer never losing sight of him a moment. Presently, he turned again, at an all-too-familiar corner, and in another 5 minutes was walking straight into the stone-cutting shop. Ranefer stopped in a nearby doorway and stared after him, bewildered. Of all the moves Gebu might have made, this was the least to be expected. Why would Gebu take the goblet to his shop? How did he dare to? Where would he hide it? The whole idea seemed insane. As soon as Ranefer felt reasonably safe in doing so, he walked quickly into the shop too, trying to appear as if he had merely come to work as on every other day. He did not risk so much as a glance in search of Gebu, but shortly after Pa'i had set him working at his first task, he saw Gebu emerging from the scroll room. His hands were empty, swinging by his sides. There was no sign of the bundle. He walked straight through the shop, spoke to Pa'i a moment at the entrance, then vanished into the street. It was an hour before Pa'i needed a plan from the scroll room. The instant he bellowed the familiar order, Ranefer was flying across the gritty floor as fast as his feet would move. Once inside the little room, he looked frantically for some sign of the bundle, some place it could be hidden. There was nothing. In the dusky light that filtered through and under the roof thatch, the shelves looked the same as ever, several tiers of them lining three of the walls and a cupboard beside the door on the fourth. Ranefer looked more closely at the cupboard. It was as dusty as everything else in the room, and its small doors were not sealed. Nothing could be in it except tools and cutting sand, as always. He looked to make sure, opening the doors gingerly with his fingernails so that he would leave no signs of his prying in the dust. Inside were tools and cutting sand. No more. Still, Gebu had come into this room with the bundle and come out without it. "Ranefer!" came Pa'i's bellow from the shop. Ranefer snatched the scroll he had been sent to fetch and ran. He would look again. He would search whenever he got the chance. It must be there. It must, he told himself, ready to burst into frustrated tears. But where? How could anyone hide it on those open shelves? It was not in the cupboard. It was too big to thrust into a scroll. Later that day, he searched again, prying hastily through piles of scrolls and hastily restacking them, staring defeated into that dusty, innocent cupboard. Gebu did not return to the shop that day, and when he came home at sunset, he had no bundle with him. For all Ranefer could find of it, bundle and goblet alike had vanished into the air. Chapter 12. For several days, Ranefer did not go near the little green room in the thicket. He dared not tell Hecate anything about the goblet. Hecate would become wildly excited. He would make elaborate spying plans. There was no telling what he would do. Whatever he did, Ranefer feared he might overdo it. Then the gods alone knew what trouble would descend upon them both. On the other hand, he did not see how he could sit and talk with Hecate and meet his eyes, unless he did tell him what had happened. I should trust him, Ranefer argued with himself. I trusted him before, about the wineskins, and think how he stood by me then. He knows how to keep his tongue from flapping. His father taught him, and he proved it was so. The arguments had no effect. He could not tell anyone about the goblet, not Hecate, not anyone. The only solution was to stay away from the thicket. It did not occur to him that Hecate might finally come and find him. However, that was precisely what Hecate did. He was standing outside the shop one evening as Ronefer emerged to start for home.
"Psst, what are you doing here?"
Ronefer stammered. "Waiting for you, of course." Hecate's snub-nosed face had lighted with relief at sight of him. Now he stood gazing at him in such a puzzled, questioning way that Ronefer felt sweaty and hot with guilt.
"Where were you all these days?" Hecate asked. "I feared that Gebu of yours had done one of those awful things he's always threatening. The Ancient and I, we didn't know what had happened."
"Nothing has happened," Ronefer mumbled with a hasty glance over his shoulder. Gebu was only a few paces away inside the shop.
"Come, let's get away from here."
As they started in the direction of the thicket, he added,
"I have been very busy, that is all. Pa'i has kept me working until late, and sometimes at midday too, and..."
He swallowed and gave up trying to find an explanation that would sound reasonable. However, Hecate quickly began to chatter about Setma and the conversation the Ancient had overheard, and when that was exhausted, he launched into a story about the Ancient's donkey, who had gone lame in one foot a few days before and had required much rubbing with castor bean oil and daubing with cool mud. Listening, Ronefer cautiously began to relax, and once they had reached the little green room in the thicket, he greeted the Ancient and examined Lotus's foot, which was well again now, and sat a while together in the old way. He decided that it was not, after all, impossible to be with Hecate and still keep silence about the goblet. Hecate was as full of talk as ever, and either failed to notice that Ronefer said little or tactfully ignored the fact. As for the Ancient, though his one bright eye rested searchingly on Ronefer several times, he asked no questions. Only once did they approach the dangerous subject, so suddenly that Ronefer had a very bad moment indeed before he realized he was safe. Without warning, Hecate said,
"Ronefer, I have an idea about this tomb affair."
"Tomb affair?" Ronefer stammered. "The drawing, you remember, the little room you did not understand."
"Oh."
Relief washed over Ronefer like cold water. He did remember now about the scroll and Gebu's anger, though he had not thought of the incident since the day it occurred. The goblet had driven everything else from his mind. "In my opinion," Hecate was saying in his craftiest manner, "they are going to use that room themselves, Gebu and Wenamun."
"Use it themselves?"
"Aye, for a meeting in secret, and for hiding the gold they steal. Now that Setma will not take it away for them." The Ancient gave his high-pitched chortle of laughter.
"Ast, young one, you should be a tailspinner in the marketplace. You'd soon be rich, with the coppers folks would pay to hear such fine, unlikely stories. Do you think even thieves are going to share a departed one's dwelling with him? Of their own accord?"
"But the tomb is not occupied yet," Hecate argued. "It is not even finished, is it, Ronefer? They could make a separate entrance."
"The tomb is not even begun," Ronefer said more abruptly than he intended.
"Oh, not even begun?"
Hecate sounded so disappointed that Ronefer was ashamed of his curtness. Anxious though he was to leave the subject of tombs, he went on.
"They will not start work on it until flood time, after the High Nile Festival. That is 3 weeks away yet. Then it will be months in building, with workmen in and out every day. They would not dare hide anything there."
"Nay, they would not," Hecate said sadly.
"It was a fine idea anyway," the Ancient chuckled.
"Fine if it had worked, as the fish said when it tried to take a walk." Hecate grinned.
"Never mind, I'll think of something else." Ronefer wanted to tell him not to try, not to think or speak of tombs again. Indeed, he changed the subject hastily.
"Just think, 3 weeks, and it will be the festival."
It was a good choice. All three began to talk of the greatest feast day of the year, when the waters of the great river would rise at last above their banks, and all the canals would be thrown open to receive the life-giving flood. There would be no work that day for anyone. All Egypt would make holiday in the streets, and the lowliest water carrier would feast at Pharaoh's expense and drink barley beer free. The prospect of honey cakes and dates and all the dried fish he could eat lifted even Ranefer's spirits. He agreed with enthusiasm to spend the feast day with his two friends from dawn to dark and thought no more of tombs or goblets until they parted on the thoroughfare. On the way home, though, his troubles came back like kefts overtaking him on silent wings. The tomb drawing clung in his mind, and so did Hecate's idea that there was some thieves' plan connected with that little room. Ranefer was sure it had nothing to do with a meeting place or stealing gold from goldsmiths or anything Hecate had imagined. But could it have something to do with robbing tombs? He did not see how. Not only was this tomb not finished, not even begun, but its owner, Pharaoh's master of storehouses, was still very much alive. There might be no burial and thus no treasure in the tomb for years. There could be no connection between that drawing and the goblet. Gebu had simply been short-tempered that day because he knew the goblet was hidden in his room and his guilt weighed heavy on him. And now it was hidden in the scroll room where it weighed upon Ranefer. Search as he might, every time he had a chance, he had not found it yet. Gebu must have kefts in league with him, Ranefer thought in despair. No mortal could hide a thing so well. Perhaps he has taken it away again after all, some time when I could not see, perhaps late at night. But I have not heard the hinges for a long time now. Nay, it is still there, it must be. Then why can't I find it? Day followed day, the river rose steadily toward its banks, growing broader, fuller, swifter. Ranefer's life remained a narrow routine of worry, occasional beatings, and work, varied only by the hour at midday or evening with his friends in the marsh. He was glad he no longer felt it necessary to avoid them, but it was still necessary to avoid telling them what he knew, and he often wished powerfully that this were not so, because it became more and more obvious that their meetings were not quite as successful as before. The thing he could not speak of hung over the little green room like an invisible presence, ruining, it seemed to Ranefer, everything he did speak of. Once, when the ancient was not with them, Hecate brought the matter into the open. Ranefer, something troubles you. Something has happened. Why do you not tell me? Perhaps I could do something. Nay, there is nothing, Ranefer said as casually as he could. You mean nothing I could do? I mean nothing has happened. Let us talk some more about the festival. We have talked about it, only a few moments ago. Then I began telling you the idea I had about that little room in the drawing, and you went back into your shell. And now suddenly you want to talk about the festival again. I do. It is more pleasant, is it not? Than tombs and rooms and... Ranefer's voice trailed off into a sulky mutter, and he sat scowling at his toes and feeling miserable. After a long, uncomfortable silence, Hecate said wryly, Do I make myself unpleasant? As the viper said to the asp. Ranefer grinned in spite of himself, and in a moment they were laughing together, though still uncomfortably. I did not mean to be poisonous, Ranefer said. Nor I am sorry. It is only that you seem so different. Different? Ranefer raised his eyes in alarm. Did the secret show so plainly? Perhaps not different. Hecate studied him thoughtfully. You seem more as you were when I first knew you at the gold house, when questions angered you and you wanted only to be left alone. I do not want to be left alone. Ranefer said miserably. Or perhaps I do, just for a while. I cannot explain. No matter, Hecate said. After a moment, he smiled. Perhaps we had better talk about the festival.
Everyone talked about it these days, made plans about it, and thought of little else. Ronefer tried hard to do the same, but the goblet lurked always at the edge of his thoughts. More than ever, he hated Gebu and his heavy fist, and the evil thing he had done. He hated most the feeling that the evil had spread like a plague to himself. With every day that passed, the secret he knew weighed heavier and guiltier on his mind. A criminal walked free in the streets because Ronefer, the son of Thutra, was afraid to tell the crime. Still, in Amon's name, what would it do to get himself murdered or imprisoned by babbling such a tale without proof?
If I had taken the goblet when I had the chance, he thought. If I were sure it was in the scroll room now, I wish I knew what to do and how to do it.
Then suddenly, on the day before the festival, his wish came devastatingly true. At midday, he went to the thicket to make final plans with his friends for the holiday. Hecate arrived late, full of news and bursting to tell it.
Sit down quickly, Ronefer. Here. Have this cheese. You'll never guess what has happened. What? Ronefer asked warily.
He had learned not to expect too much from Hecate's enthusiasms.
Well, I have been spying again, only by chance this time, to be truthful. I was coming to meet you just now, just a few moments ago, and I saw Wenamun ahead of me, so I thought I would follow him just for a while. He turned into the street of the potters, you know, at the corner where Abba's shop stands. Well, there is a big shed next to it, only a roof, really, with poles to support it, where Abba dries his plates and jars.
I know, go on. Something about this story was making Ronefer exceedingly uneasy. Surely Gebu would not hide treasure in pots and jars, but,
well, Gebu was waiting there. He was pretending to look at the pots, strolling about idly, you know, but really, he was waiting.
Wenamun made as if he would pass right by, then pretended to see Gebu, oh, quite by accident, and stopped to greet him.
Anyone watching except me, of course.
Hecate's eyes narrowed craftily. Would have thought they strolled into the shed merely to find shade while they exchanged a few civilities.
Oh, it was cleverly done, but I was cleverer.
What did they say? Could you hear them? Tell me quickly.
Hecate would not be hurried.
I'm coming to that. I slipped into the shed too, and crept among the benches and tables where the pots are put to dry, and found a place quite close to them where I could hide behind a stack of new-made water jars. It took me some time, of course, because I dared not make any noise, so I did not hear the first of what they said.
What did you hear? Please hurry.
I heard Gebu's voice first. He spoke very low, but it made a chill go up my spine the way he spoke. He said,
"Of course on the festival."
Fancy anyone cursing the High Nile feast.
Go on, Ronefer begged.
I am.
A curse on the festival, he said. The Nile can flood without us. Meet me at daybreak beside the broken tree. It is safe enough now.
Everything in Ronefer seemed to stop. Heart, breath, thoughts. It was like the stone-cutting shop at midday when the clatter suddenly died to silence all at once. Hecate must have been satisfied with the effect he had created, for his eyes glistened.
Then Wenamun said, "It would be safer a year hence." And Gebu growled at him low like a vicious dog. "Or never. I've waited long enough," he said. "I made the plan. Now I want my reward, before I am too old to enjoy it. Do as I bid you."
I must get hold of myself, Ronefer thought. I must think of something very fast that will make Hecate forget all this. But what? What?
And then?
He said in as calm a tone as he could manage.
Then Wenamun said, "And what of afterwards?"
At first I did not know what he meant, but soon I did, for Gebu smiled in a very unpleasant way and said,
I have attended to that only an hour ago. Setma is not the only captain on the river, as I told him at the time.
So Gebu had found a new smuggler, and the goblet would soon be gone, if it were not already.
Go on, said Ron-Effer, swallowing.
That is all. Gebu turned without another word and went off down the street, putting his feet down like chunks of stone. In a moment, Wenamun left too.
Ron-Effer was silent, concentrating on keeping his expression casual while his mind spun furiously.
Well, Hecate said, what do you think of it? I do not know what broken tree they mean, but if they are meeting tomorrow, should we not spy on them again and
miss the feasting?
We can feast later, when we have found out where they go. Surely you would not miss this chance.
I do not think it is a chance, Ron-Effer said.
Suddenly, out of sheer necessity, inspiration came.
Gebu is going to Abydos today. We cannot follow him there.
Hecate's face fell ludicrously.
To Abydos?
I heard him tell Pa'i so.
Then why would he... Oh, I suppose the broken tree is there.
No doubt Wenamun is going too.
Aye, very likely.
Ron-Effer nibbled on his cheese, attempting to seem thoughtful and even disappointed, looking anywhere but at Hecate. Hecate was silent for some minutes.
It does seem strange, he said at last in a puzzled voice, that they would make their plans here, where they are known and might be overheard. Why not on the boat, going down the river?
Perhaps they are going on different boats.
Where do I find these explanations so fast? Ron-Effer thought, disgusted with himself. I am becoming as good a liar as that Babylonian.
That it is, of course. Hecate sounded disgusted with himself, too, for not seeing something so apparent. Naturally, they would not travel together. It might seem suspicious.
Doubtless they will pretend not to know each other at all when they get to Abydos.
Ast, I wish we had a friend who sails a Nile boat. I would give my new shenty to see what they do tomorrow. There's no doubt some goldsmith will be the poorer for it.
I'm afraid you are right.
Ron-Effer gave a sigh that Hecate need not know was one of relief instead of disappointment.
Hecate sighed too and got to his feet.
It's clear we can do nothing about it this time. I am sorry.
It was such a good bit of spying.
I will meet you tomorrow as we planned.
At least we have the festival to console us.
With a grin, he led the way out through the curtain of reeds, and Ron-Effer followed. He had not tasted a bite of the good cheese he had eaten, and the festival had dwindled to nothing in his mind. He knew quite well that only one thing could lure Gebu from the prospect of free barley beer, the gold of the tombs. If he and that vulture who was his friend did not mean to join the merrymaking tomorrow, they were almost certainly going to the Valley of the Tombs of the Kings in broad daylight this time, while all Thebes was occupied with feasting. Profoundly disturbed, Ron-Effer scarcely knew what he did all afternoon at the shop. When work ended for the day, he wandered through the scorching streets, blind and deaf to the spirit of holiday already sweeping the crowds around him. He had no desire to go home, but no reason for going anywhere else. He found himself at last pushing through the rustling stiff reeds of the papyrus marsh, with the water lapping almost to his knees. The deep mud of the shallows was cool and soothing to his bare feet, but he could take no pleasure in it. Over and over in his mind appeared the image of the familiar mummy-shaped outline of the western hills and the sheer red cliffs that hid the Valley of the Tombs of the Kings. How could he feast tomorrow, knowing with every bit of honey cake what was happening yonder? He would choke on the food.
"Aye, look, my lotus, we have a visitor," cried a familiar voice almost at his elbow.
He spun around to see the ancient and his donkey splashing through the tall reeds. The old man stopped and looked at him cautiously.
What ails you, young one? Did you think I was a keft?
Nay, Ranefer muttered, but his heart still pounded from the nervous start he had given. To cover it, he waded a little farther, pushed aside the last fringe of papyrus, pretending to study the bright-colored sails that dotted the river. The ancient followed, talking cheerfully.
It's a fine sight, isn't it, to see the river full to its brim again? Makes a man work with a will. I've a good load today, by the grace of Osiris. I'll wager the sailmakers will greet me with shouts of joy, and load me with coppers. Oh, aye, certainly. May Set take their stingy hides. They'll give me as little as I'll take.
The ancient chuckled and loosed his donkey to drink.
But why worry? Tomorrow everyone will have cakes and beer, aye, he mused. Great Osiris is ready to loose his flood over the land once more. Seen any hangings lately?
For a moment, the noisy sucking of the donkey was the only answer to the familiar joke. Then Ranefer said,
Nay!
The word came out so choked that the old man turned to peer at him.
What ails you, young one?
He asked again.
Nothing.
Ranefer's bare toes dug convulsively into the mud.
I was only thinking of those wicked ones we saw hanging there that day. Ancient, how was their crime found out?
He could feel the old man still watching him, though he kept his own eyes on the sails.
Why? The ancient answered slowly. They were followed.
Followed to the valley? Startled out of his nervousness, Ranefer turned to stare at him.
Aye, to the valley, to the tomb itself, and into the tomb.
Into the tomb? But who would dare?
One who loved his pharaoh and the gods of Egypt, he dared,
the ancient said simply. His one eye was shrewd and very thoughtful.
Why do you ask me, young one? What do you know of tomb thieves, save what I tell you?
Nothing, nothing at all, Ranefer said quickly. I am merely curious.
Aye, curious. I know the ways of boys. They are like cats who thrust their noses into everything and oftentimes are sorry. You had best save your curiosity, young one, for safer subjects.
Ranefer swallowed and did not answer. The ancient was still studying him as if trying to see straight through his eyes into his heart, and Ranefer was beginning to feel alarmingly transparent.
Well, I must take my leave, he stammered, edging away. We will meet tomorrow, at daybreak, the three of us?
Aye, of course.
And you are... nothing ails you?
Nay. Ranefer turned and left abruptly, forgetting to mumble so much as live forever, in his haste to get away. Only after he was well beyond the thicket and emerging into the dusty lane did he call down Amun's protection on the old man, and on himself, who needed it far more. For when Gebu set out tomorrow for the Valley of the Tombs of the Kings, he knew he must follow. Chapter 13. The stars still spangled the sky when Ranefer woke to the pad of Gebu's footsteps crossing the courtyard next morning. Memory swept over him, and with it, a chilling knowledge of the thing in store for him today. He lay still, eyes tight shut against reality, but he could not shut out the whine of the storeroom door. The footsteps coming out again a little later, and finally the soft click of the gate. Gebu was gone, and he must not get away this time. Ranefer rose from his mat and ran across the pavement and into the storeroom. A splash of water on his face, a thirsty swallow or two, and he was searching hastily for food. There was half a loaf and a couple of onions. Ranefer started on the bread as he left the room, trying not to picture the coming feasting in the streets of Thebes. The chances were slim that he would ever taste another honey cake. He walked quickly across the courtyard, everything in him wanting to run the other way. At the gate he paused, his hand already on the latch, and suddenly leaned his head forward against the worn, familiar wood. He was shaking all over.
"I wish I were someone else," he thought. "Hecate, or the Ancient, or Kai, the baker's boy, or even a cat or a dog. Then I would not know any secrets. I would be going out to feast today instead of to some dark and fierce